Hello and welcome to India Reset, a Financial Express podcast with focus on the ESG imperative. The ESG imperative is hosted by Dr. Mukund Rajan, where he talks with the who's who of the industry, breaking down the ins and outs of environment, social and governance, or ESG, changes in corporate India. Mukund Rajan is the chairman of eCube Investment Advisors, a first-of-its-kind platform created in 2019 to catalyze ESG changes. Prior to this, he held a number of senior executive positions through his 23-year career with the Tata Group, where he served as the first brand custodian of the Tata Group, Chief Ethics Officer, Chairman of the Tata Global Sustainability Council, and member of the Group Executive Council at Tata Sons. Dr. Rajan's third book, Outlast, How ESG Can Benefit Your Business, co-authored with Dr. Colonel Rajiv Kumar, has just been published by HarperCollins. In today's episode, Dr. Rajan talks to Ms. Naina Lal Kidwai, Chair, India Sanitation Coalition and former President of FICCI. They talk everything ESG. Now, over to Dr. Rajan.
Hello and welcome to this Fireside Chat. My name is Mukund Rajan. I'm delighted to be part of the series of conversations on India Reset, the ESG imperative with the Financial Express. I recently authored a book titled Outlast, How ESG Can Benefit Your Business. The book suggests that a focus on ESG can help businesses to build resilience, gain competitive advantage, and achieve greater returns in the long run. My guest today is Naina Lal Kidwai. Naina has had a stellar career after becoming the first Indian woman to graduate from the Harvard Business School. And amongst her very many achievements, she's been country head of HSBC India, executive director of the board of HSBC Asia Pacific, head of investment banking at Morgan Stanley India, has served on a number of boards, including the Nestle board for over 12 years, and currently serves at the Holcim board. She's been the president of the leading industry association, FICCI, and is the author of several books. In today's conversation with Naina, I'm looking forward to getting her perspective on the ESG imperative. Welcome, Naina. It's great to have you on the show.
Thank you, Mukund. Delighted to be here with you.
Thank you. So I'm going to start, Naina, by asking you, why do you think there is so much more interest of late in ESG?
I think, Mukund, a lot of this is being driven, as is inevitable, with the global agenda, where suddenly, and I think COVID may have also highlighted some of this, that international companies are bringing everything to do with ESG to the forefront. Investors are driving this in terms of large companies. So we find that the investor community, particularly in the larger stocks globally, are requiring it. We have seen these actions from the Black Rocks of the world and, you know, the heads of these large investor communities driving the discussion. And our CEOs in India are very aware of all of this because they have the same investors in their stocks. So I think the big change is happening really because big money is driving the thinking, and companies in their own self-interest, hearts may be in the right place, but heads are certainly going into the right place because it plays to their need to have those investors committed into their stocks. Banks are a little far behind. So the financing community is also beginning to ask the relevant questions, but they are not at the forefront of driving the change. I think the banks will come at it more from a health indicator of whether this is the sort of company they should be lending to. And they will veer away from those companies that haven't got it. So finance is certainly, I think, what is driving it. I would like to believe that there is a millennial sort of population out there that is looking at these issues. It's believed that they do have far more interest in these subjects than maybe our generation has had. But it's not obvious to me that that is driving change as yet in terms of retail investor thinking and changing the way the corporate is thinking. But I do think that they will be the future and therefore will become a much more important voice going forward. Regulators, that's another reason. We are finding regulatory communities in Europe, in the US, now also requiring this. We have it now in SEBI, driving some of the thinking. Our Ministry of Corporate Affairs is also engaging quite deeply on what these criteria must look like. So business responsibility, business responsiveness are very important themes at a regulatory level as well. So the good thing is that all the engines are moving for the first time really in driving the change. And that is why I think it has become so topical and your book, therefore, so timely in terms of the way companies are going to have to look at their governance structures.
Thank you. So one of the questions that people have is, at one level, there's nothing especially new about many of the key indicators that reflect ESG performance. And yet, clearly, many businesses have been very hesitant about improving their performance indicators on these metrics. Why do you think that's been the case?
You know, I think while it's not new, Mukund, and you're right to say that, I think the fact that it has now become important, earlier it was a nice to have, now it is you have to have. Because if you don't tick the box, you are going to actually be relegated to the sidelines in terms of finance, investors, and interest in your stock price. So I think that is what has changed, that the materiality and the importance of this. I think the second is we are suddenly seeing a lot more out there in terms of what are those ratings, which ratings matter. Because for a company that kind of got it, they were confused on how to move ahead on pulling it all together. So sort of doing the right things on environment. Yes, we work with the community. And of course, we are compliant and have the governance in place. But how did we communicate it? And companies are really struggling with how to communicate it as well back to the university. So the communication, and the communication is very much helped by ratings and having, say, a good rating on the Dow Jones Index, Sustainability Index, etc., helps. But if you haven't been in there getting yourself rated, then it becomes very hard to communicate exactly what you're doing. It's kind of lost in a sustainability report if you have one, maybe in bits and pieces in your annual report. But it's very hard for people who are just reading it, not maybe looking for it, to understand. And I think this is the change that we are finding, that the rating indices are all coming up. And there's some convergence now around the one or two that will matter. Because a company that sort of is doing it, but is confused as to how to pull it all together, sees 15 different rating possibilities out there, not really sure which one to pick, is sort of saying, well, let me wait and see which ones emerge as the key ones, and then we'll put all our efforts to bundling the information in there. And I think that confusion still persists. There's some now emergence of a European index coming in, which are the ones to follow, the science-based SBTI and such are being embraced because they are seen as more technical. The investor community is getting its heads around which it is giving more focus to. And I think with that, there will be a convergence, exactly as we're trying to do in India. We're building our own sort of index, which is a good start. I just don't want it to be too different to what the rest of the world looks at, because we need to align with that. But all of this will bring clarity and will ease the way companies are able to assemble the data, raise the bar, and win accolades going forward in order to subscribe. So I think it's really that journey that's causing a lot of the confusion. And indeed, I think companies are still struggling on some of these.
Got it. In the effort to really improve and demonstrate a real commitment to ESG performance, how relevant do you think it's going to be for Indian companies to pay much more attention in the future than perhaps has been paid in the past on research and development and innovation? Particularly when you think about new challenges like climate change and global warming.
So I think for companies whose DNA is in R&D, it may come easier than to those that it's not. And what I mean by this is technology and IT companies. Pharma have done their own R&D. So these companies understand innovation, understand R&D, and they may embrace this further. as at a corporate level. But there may be a whole body of innovation, R&D that emerges outside of traditional corporates who want to make money and get investors interested in technologies that anyone can subscribe to. So I would like to believe that there will be a huge opportunity out there for the sort of social impact sectors. And it doesn't have to be about lower returns, that these are the things that they can sell as products, as services to the corporates who want to subscribe to ESG. So I think it will come more as sort of venture capital and encouragement from those that are looking at innovation, which then gets subscribed to by the corporates rather than corporates doing the R&D and innovation for themselves in some of these climate change spaces. Yes, it will grow as a body across the world. And I think companies will subscribe to these products and services quite readily as they develop.
One of the sectors in the Indian business community that traditionally has said, you know, they don't get the attention they deserve, and particularly in the context of ESG challenges that lie ahead, including what a lot of people now describe as a just transition, is the MSME community. What kind of support do you think the MSMEs are going to need, including from many of the larger corporates in India and also multinational enterprises whose supply chain they form part of?
You know, you've raised a very important aspect. And I think the supply chain to larger corporates who get the ESG messaging is going to be the first level of change. If you are an MSME that is part of the supply chain of a larger corporate, which is beginning to require it, for you to stay a supplier into that corporate or to be able to bid for that business, you have to conform, change, and it demonstrates that you have embraced the various aspects of ESG. And by the same token, as you rightly point out, the corporate that wants to take that supplier along with it has to help it. It can help it by showing exactly what that requirement is. And I think it's easier for an MSME to just understand, hey, guys, this is how it has to be. And the MSME then just corrects for it rather than having to think for itself. So laying down the dictate and the line, but helping that supplier to go along the line. It shouldn't just be a case of, hey, I'm dropping you because you don't cut it, but rather I want to help you be there with me and I'm going to give you 3 years to get there. And these are the sort of ways you could. And that helping hand becomes important. Finance can also be helpful because we are coming through a COVID period which has impacted MSMEs very hard. And some of this will require capital and investment. So helping them, whether it is to access the banks directly or giving them a line of credit to help in terms of, you know, greening their own supply chain, are all ways that would be important. So I think one is, of course, the diktat that you just get out there and sort of tell them this is it. You have to do it, you know, frighten them into it. But then that helping hand to help them get there would be important. The timing is not great. We have many MSMEs today that are struggling to stay alive. And then if you create another layer of complication for them, it's very hard for them to embrace this right now. But the fact is the world is not waiting on these fronts. And they're going to have to help get there. I think there is another way, Mukund, and I think sometimes it's very hard for companies at an individual level to do everything that is required. I talking to some of the MSMEs, they were, you know, we're ready to pay for the service. But when you tell me I have to treat my own effluent, that I have to do X, Y, Z in pollution control, etc., or get renewable energy, and it's very hard for me to do it at an individual company level. However, if a cluster of MSMEs can get together and do it, which would suggest that, you know, maybe government has to play a bit of a helping hand. Maybe there are NGOs out there that can help. But where a cluster can come together or government provides the service, say it's effluent control, but bills for it, and the government can be in a private-public partnership sort of space, then you may get easier conforming to some of these requirements because they are prepared to pay, they understand the regulation, but the issue is often how to implement and the large capital cost that goes with the implementation. What can we do as a community?
Correct. No, that's a great suggestion. I think in many parts of the country, you do have these clusters. So identifying them and then providing a lot of the capability and backing, I think, becomes a little easier. So it'd be lovely to see that recommendation taken up.
Yeah. A lot will depend on who has to drive it. Some champion out there that needs to pick up on it. And I think government will be a very important player there.
Correct. Now, you talked about the importance of investors in driving change on this whole ESG agenda. And I think it would be fair to say that in many developed markets, a lot of this has been prompted by regulatory requirements. So the European Union, for instance, we are seeing that there is a focus on reporting of the ESG performance of portfolios. On issues like climate change, we're seeing countries like the United Kingdom, which has recently mandated that from 2023, all listed companies will have to disclose their net zero transition plans. And already, I think well over $100 trillion of invested funds around the world have subscribed to the United Nations Principles for Responsible Investment, or the UNPRI. And these principles, of course, require investors to incorporate ESG issues into their investment analysis and decision-making processes. So around the world, you're seeing a big thrust of investors in public and private markets on ESG. But when you turn to India in the last couple of years, when a lot of this talk has started happening, we're still, at least in the public markets, perhaps in terms of domestic capital, scratching the surface. So less than $2 billion, probably around 13,000 crores, which are invested in domestic ESG-focused mutual funds. Do you see this quantum of domestic capital committed to ESG expanding significantly in the near future? How much time is it going to take?
So I do think it will expand. I'm in fact a part of a mission board of EQT, which is Europe's biggest private equity fund, which has just launched an ESG type of fund. So it's quite new everywhere. And the investor communities that invest in these funds will show that there is interest in terms of money chasing for these specific funds. But I think there's a whole other area in domestic capital, which is equally important. And that is a fund manager that says it will only invest in stocks that are ESG compliant, however that is defined by that fund manager. And as we see some of these rating norms come through, I think it will help funds define it. So there are two aspects to the way money will drive this. One is, yes, ESG-specific funds. And in ESG-specific funds, Mukund, I do believe that investors will be happy to invest, but they may not be happy to receive lower returns. So I think what you get is, yes, it ticks the box and we will invest in it. But hey, you make sure that you're only investing in companies that will give us the returns we are used to. We may agree that the return can be, instead of 5 to 7 years, 7 to 10 years, that it be longer tenured in terms of sustainability. But I think we will have to, and that is where the challenge may come in, that it's not going to be for sustainability itself. It becomes more and more a hygiene factor. And if you don't have it, I won't invest, rather than I will invest because I want to, but I certainly don't want to sacrifice returns. So I think where this needle moves is important. I think what we should see is domestic capital requiring the hygiene factors in ESG, that making it very clear that there are companies which don't cut it, and they have to be able to demonstrate how they do it. Now, this is easier said than done. If you are a traditional business that has used coal to fuel your power, you are not going to be able to shift overnight in a country which is still very coal dependent in terms of power. So the fund manager should have the flexibility to understand the journey the company has embarked on. What are the targets it has set? How is it going to convert from fossil fuel to renewables? And if the direction is right, continue to invest. The day you withdraw money just because they don't tick a box, you begin to really be the death knell for companies who may have been slow starters. And yes, I mean, they should certainly have to pay a price for that. But they do have a desire now to make that change. So I think getting that direction set is more important than just a yes-no type of analysis or thinking or investment strategy.
Terrific. In fact, in the same context, the regulators for the various institutional investor community participants, so SEBI for mutual funds, the insurance regulator for the insurance industry, and the pension fund regulator for pension funds, each of them has actually prescribed stewardship codes for fund managers that they regulate. Do you think these stewardship codes could be monitored in terms of their deployment a bit more carefully to ensure fund managers are doing more to actually task their portfolio investee companies to do better on ESG?
I would really like to believe so, because, you know, it's quite easy to monitor how fund managers work, because SEBI is there. There is a regulatory framework. The fund managers are competitive with each other, so each trying to prove that they can outdo the other in doing the right thing are all ways that will help us get there. And I would like to believe that many of our fund managers are really, you know, their hearts are also in the right place. They don't want to be doing the wrong thing. And yes, they want the returns. And as long as there are umpteen opportunities out there for them to be able to pick the stocks, so why would you not pick the top three pharma stocks that are performing well, but are also right there in terms of their ESG performance? However, if it is a good performing stock that is not ticking the boxes on ESG, I think you would be right as a fund manager to believe that maybe in 5 years it's not going to remain at the top, because that stock in turn is very dependent on the foreign institutional investor community to keep its price up. And that community will move away. So you would be best placed, even as a domestic fund manager, to begin to look at these factors and know that in the longer run, you're invested in a company which cannot continue its upward share price movement, because there will be a community, maybe a foreign institutional community, that is going to dump it. So I think that's where the alignment happens, that a domestic investor fund manager will also begin to see the writing on the wall for companies that don't have their ESG mindset correctly placed. And meanwhile, the nudge from the regulator is always helpful in terms of getting that thinking going and started as well. What it would suggest is you would need skill sets too in the fund manager community that can help that fund manager assess what is happening. Now, it can happen through ratings. It could be, the DJSAI or SBTI, that companies themselves are able to show you, hey, here's where we score. And we actually tick the box there. And that makes it much easier for a fund manager, because there's some kind of external rating which helps. And I think we will see more of this kind of rating use coming up, which will make fund managers' jobs easier, but also make corporates look at complying to a level where they can provide the rating.
Quite right. And I think we are already seeing some of the benefit of greater scrutiny. Certainly, if you look at an indicator like the rising number of against votes that are taking place on proxy resolutions, I think more scrutiny is taking place, and more institutional investors are now actually looking very closely at the fine print and expressing the point of view, which, say, 5 years back also was much less the case. Many institutional investors would, in fact, not even vote on proxy resolutions. Yeah. So I think the regulators have had a very good impact in at least persuading people to start voting. And hopefully, as you said, the ecosystem evolves and offers much more insight into how votes should happen.
Yeah. So, but Mukund, you talk about votes. So, you know, as a board member, of course, one worries about how a company is perceived, and also about resolutions being appropriately voted on. I think one of the big struggles will remain at, as one looks at it at a board, is how the KPIs of the top team reflect on ESG indicators. So you can get a company that buys into it, is doing all the right stuff. In some companies, and I think unfortunately, often just driven by a CSR team, because this is not about CSR at all. This is about the DNA of a company. So how do we actually build the KPIs in to the top team, the CEO downwards, and certainly at the management executive committee level, is also going to be important. What are the criteria? How do you measure it? Companies are struggling with this. And I can tell you as chair on a couple of these NRCs, we want it. Companies kind of agree that it should be there. But when you get down to what weightage and what exactly you're measuring, it's still a struggle. But I think until it is built in to the performance culture of the organization, where the DNA of the organization aligns around why the ESG is part of their performance, we will only see some of the lip service that goes with it and the easy boxes being ticked in terms of what needs to be done, rather than the organization driving its entire culture along these. Because at the end of the day, it should become a hygiene factor. If you don't tick the boxes on ESG, you have not ticked the hygiene factors. It's not a nice to have, it is a have to have. And that is where the world is going to be, I think, in the next 3 to 5 years. So we better get that message out there right now and begin to reform organizations to really move in these directions. Absolutely. There's a lot of confusion out there, though. Companies that want to do it don't quite know how, where to start. It's not easy because there's no one answer out there. But I can see there'll be a huge amount of consultancy type of organizations and maybe even technologies that will help companies measure this.
Quite right. You've touched upon the importance of finance. Now, we've just had the budget announcements for the finance minister. And in a first for India, she announced a sovereign green bond.
Yeah.
What expectations would you have from the use of the proceeds of such a bond offering, Naina?
So I must say, I was delighted to see that announcement. From what I understand, government will tend to use it more for its own public sector companies. God alone knows there are many there that can do with this support. I would like to believe that it won't be just a lazy green bond activity, because a lot of the initial green bond investing happened in the renewable sector. And I say lazy because it's an obvious one. I mean, your renewables, clearly green bonds qualify, do it. But there's a whole other level of greening that should qualify for green bond investing. So water efficiency, it would be one, the circularity of water. In power, it's not just about renewables, it's about energy efficiency as well. We also find more and more messaging around human rights and sustainability in terms of the supply chain. And these require a little more work, a little more analysis, ratification, audit. So if government can drive its own companies, and banks would be a major element of change, if we can get our public sector banks to qualify to use green bonds in a way that they in turn can drive those that they support. There's no point my bank, at HSBC, we were right up there in terms of what we would not fund even 10 years ago because of environmental issues. But it really didn't matter in a country like ours, because we could have said no, but did it matter? Because that funding was readily available from largely the public sector banks out there. So until we can move the needle on how our public sector banks also lend and who they will not lend to, and can they qualify to partake in some of these green bond exercises of government, we would miss out on a very major element of change that could happen. Government is in many sectors which are quite tough on this front, you know, whether it's Coal India, NTPC, you have a number of the mining companies. Each of these have a journey to embark on to begin to come up the curve. Otherwise, we as Indians are going to lose what were seen as our Maharatnas, are going to become mega problems going forward. So if the government and its treasury must benefit from these ratnas, which it has had for so many years and who have predominant market share in the country, how does the share price of these companies reflect and look like the same as it might be for the cohort elsewhere in the world? Can only happen if the investor community is happy to invest in these companies. And it's going to be critical for them to continue on a path of greening. I think many will tick the S box because the public sector actually, I've been on many juries where awards are given for the community engagement that they have provided. Environment is tougher, largely because of fossil fuel engagement, I think, and some of those issues. Governance, compliance, they're sort of there. But, you know, there are many aspects of governance at a board level and independent directors and the way that runs, which don't tick the box. So there is going to have to be effort that is provided therein. But the green bonds part, I think, will go a long way in terms of capital that may be required by these large public sector companies, particularly in their power frameworks and how they use energy and power and water as resources, pollution, effluent control, and, of course, ultimately helping them help their supply chains as well. So it can be put to very good use.
Fantastic. Nena, you've talked about the importance of ESG ratings and reportage. And of course, one problem we currently have is there is no universal framework that all countries and markets sort of adhere to. Though, of course, at Glasgow, at COP26, there's an announcement around the new International Sustainability Standards Board. And hopefully that will come out with something that will be more akin to a common vocabulary. In the meantime, of course, in India, SEBI has the Business Responsibility and Sustainability Report, the BRSR. How much importance are you seeing and how much do you think you'd like to see around Indian businesses communicating their ESG intent via the BRSR? And SEBI has already put out some disclosure guidelines as well on what you would like to see, both on essential indicators and leadership indicators. How are you seeing the sort of tempo building up on BRSR reporting in India?
So, you know, for companies that already got it, I would say, the top 100 market cap companies are top market cap companies because they already tick the boxes on these fronts. They have large institutional investors who keep their stocks right up there as a result. For them, it becomes an additional headache. I mean, you know, hey, they may well be passed what the BRSR requires, but now there's another format. But for them, then it's really just the reporting because there'd be no additional burden in terms of what compliance is required. The issue is for the broader, the 1,000, those that haven't got there, and then the next 1,000 who are really not there to begin to have a framework. But I think it is important that that framework has come. Now, I would just like to make sure that that framework is easy. It shouldn't be too burdensome through a very detailed bureaucratic exercise of what needs to be reported. So the easier we make it initially, the quicker we get more and more companies jumping onto the bandwagon, then we can keep tightening the screws. And the other, which I feel is very important, is that we must align with whatever global standard is out there. Because in itself, this standard may be peculiar to India, but until the global investor community recognizes that it aligns with what they are used to see, it's not going to be a factor. And I worry about that. Would it be better for a company to just sign up to a global standard right now and begin its reporting there and not bother with the Indian on the full understanding that that global standard is maybe the same or higher than what the Indian standard might be. But are they now going to also have to comply with providing a whole separate report to SEBI? And I think what if I was SEBI, I would be saying, hey, we have drawn from these global ones, and the following three or four rating standards provided globally are enough. If you already are there, you don't have to do this. And there has to be a, you know, something that says, hey, we accept that what we have is the start of a journey, and it is for companies that can't get themselves rated at a global level, rather than tell everyone, well, you all have to do it. So I think that would be important because money is global. Money is not specific to India. We really want to have standards in the country which everybody understands globally. I mean, imagine if every country in the world sets up its own ESG standard like ours. Fund managers are going to go mad. And what I fear is that they'll just say, okay, I'm just going to invest in the UK and the US because these are the standards which I understand and they're from global standard setters, and to hell with this other stuff, right? Which will mean that Indian companies that want to have those foreign institutional investor communities investing, and as you well know, the big investments that we have, that of course the domestic mutual funds count for a bit, but the big movers in India all have very large foreign institutional money, are going to be looking to those ratings anyways. So I think we will have to do a bit of a reality check on this. But that standard being there would be important for the MSMEs, for those companies that are still coming up the curve. And I think that's where we need to make it easier rather than trying to make it so comprehensive that it becomes a very arduous, difficult job for our guys.
Great. Thanks so much, Naina. Almost running out of time. So my last question is really an invitation to you to comment on this subject of greenwashing. You hear so much about it of late. It hit some of the headlines in some of the large financial newspapers earlier this week as well. Is this a significant worry for the Indian market as companies come to grips with what needs to be reported and the level of detail they need to get into? I'm also reminded of CDP, the Carbon Disclosure Project. In the past, when they first started trying to collate data on carbon emissions and the impact on global warming that companies had, many companies are very resistant to either giving full disclosure or even offering any kind of commentary. But over the years, as they become more comfortable with the whole process, I think you're seeing many more accurate reports now come out. And I think the larger companies have certainly stepped up and understood that this is data that the market relies on and investors are looking out for. And I think the level of accuracy has also improved. But any notes of caution on this whole concern around greenwashing?
Of course. You know, I think you've raised a very important area. Because I know that a couple of the boards I was on, global boards, were like puzzled by how certain companies were being ranked and rated where they were, whereas all that they had made were announcements, you know, 2030, 2050, I will be sort of at zero carbon emissions. But the intent was not evident in terms of actions. But the intent was getting rewarded without enough detail on how that company was going to get there. And I think that is changing now because the investor communities are also coming up for criticism on having bought into these sort of targets of the investee or corporate without having maybe seen enough detail. And that's what I think we will see. You know, the more science-based targeting, the measurement, the disclosure of that measurement by a third party certifying are important. And so, for example, you know, the board of Holcim, which I sit on now, you know, cement in itself is the nature of process, whether it's steel or cement, are big carbon emitters. Do we need cement and steel in the world? Absolutely. How much can that process change to make these whole products and industries different is going to require change in process, technology. They can change at the edges. You can change by using more renewable energy. You can help by capturing carbon. You can help by using waste plastic, as Holcim does in its furnaces. So you take out what is not good for humanity and save the ocean, save our landfills, and use it as a source of energy. And these technologies have been developed by companies like Holcim. So you do what you can, but ultimately, for the whole industry to move the needle, whether it's cement or steel or some of these, is a very different kettle of fish. And I think for this, the measurement becomes very, very critical. So it can't just be about the rating. You can be top of the heap in terms of the best in the cement sector. But how does the sector as a whole begin to change is also going to be important. And how does the sector come together on this, where traditionally you have competed at a level where this may actually be your USP, the fact that you can do it better than the others. Is it a technology that you're prepared to share with the competitor because it is better for the world? And can we insist that some of this is made available? I think it will raise some of these ethical issues as well, on because I'm good, I embrace what I have as my technology rather than share it, where the whole industry has to be firm. And it's going to raise some very interesting moral and ethical issues as well. But for now, measurement through third-party assessment, through some of the tools that are available out there, are going to be critical. And the raters and rating agencies will require this in order to be able to build it into their ratings. So I think, you know, again, we will see that growing. And therefore, the greenwashing, which is just loose statements made out there and signing up to various pledges, etc., is going to be less and less important because companies are going to have to demonstrate the journey they're on in this regard.
Amazing insights. Thank you so much, Naina. That's about all the time that we have today. The ESG landscape is changing swiftly in India. As we heard from Naina, many stakeholders are going to be holding Indian businesses to significantly higher standards than in the past. Business as usual will not be an option going forward, and there will be a clear reset thanks to the new ESG paradigm. We'll have to leave it there, I'm afraid. Thank you so much, Naina, for your time, and see you again soon. And goodbye for now.
Thank you, Mukund, and keep writing, and let's see more books from you on the subject.
You were listening to India Reset, the ESG Imperative, a Financial Express podcast hosted by Dr. Mukund Rajan. Today's show was produced by me, Anantnath Sharma, and edited and mixed by Suresh Pawar. You can listen to this show on the Financial Express website and app, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. If you were listening to this show on Spotify or Apple, don't forget to leave a rating. It will help us get discovered by more people. If you have any feedback, do write into us at podcasts@indianexpress.com. That's podcast with an S. We'll be back with another episode of India Reset, the ESG Imperative, very soon.